Welcome to No More Booze, the podcast. I'm Olivia Farrelly, and in every episode, I explore the role that alcohol has in our lives. I interview people who have decided to live their life with no more booze. We'll explore their relationship with alcohol, how it made their life better, how it made their life worse, any lessons they've learned along the way, and what advice they would give to others who are contemplating a life without alcohol. So whether you are sober curious, you're sober serious, or you're already living your life alcohol-free, this podcast will provide inspiration and motivation as you begin to untangle and reassess your relationship with the booze. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to No More Booze, the podcast. Today, I have an incredible guest who I have been absolutely obsessed with for the last little while, obsessing over her Instagram page, which is jam-packed full of incredible information. It is Jennifer Salzman, who is dialing in from upstate New York. You're so welcome. How are you?
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me, Olivia. I feel, gosh, I don't think anyone's ever told me they're obsessed with me, not even former lovers. So thank you.
I'm very dramatic. but you're so welcome. Do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes, sure. So my name is Jennifer Salzman. I am a mindfulness coach, and I've been alcohol free for about 5 years, and I work with people who are neurodivergent, people with ADHD, like myself, who are struggling with their drinking. And it's kind of that gray area where they don't consider themselves alcoholics, but they know that alcohol is really hurting more than it's helping. So we come up with healthier coping tools instead of turning to alcohol when we're stressed out.
Yeah. And I do a monthly community call, and I just had my one last night, and we talked about regulating starting in the body. So how do we regulate ourselves when we're used to the drink, like so the glass of wine to help us connect or relax or de-stress or whatever. So when we remove that, then how do we get into that regulated state then? So yeah, we'll get into all of that in the course of the next about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour. So do you want to tell us, just I suppose in reflective mode, so what did alcohol give you when you began drinking or throughout the time that you did drink alcohol?
Yeah, so you know, I guess to start off, I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was in my 40s. I was 41.
Okay.
So I spent my entire childhood, adulthood with undiagnosed ADHD. So I didn't realize that this is what was wrong with me, but I felt very, just kind of like a misfit. Like, I appeared to be normal, but I always felt like I was missing something. And, you know, there's a constant chatter in my brain, this really negative self-talk that I walked around with constantly. And when I discovered alcohol at the age of, like, I don't know, 16, 17, it was like this magic elixir. It made all of that noise go away. And suddenly I didn't feel so weird. I felt like I could talk to people and go to parties and be social. And it made me feel normal. And so that was sort of the beginnings of my drinking career. And, you know, as I went on through life, I never thought that I drank so much more or had an unhealthy relationship with alcohol, more so than any of the people that I spent time with, right? Because I hung out with drinkers. But as time went on, it became less of a fun social thing that just like to turn off the noise, and became more of a need and a crutch and something that like became the focus of my life rather than just an accessory of my life. And yeah, so that's sort of the high level relationship.
Yeah, but I think I'd say, if I'm a betting woman, you know, I'd say 99% of people who are listening to this felt exactly the same, you know, because, and everything that you said, I was nodding away to. So like, I would have always felt a little bit strange, or that like some of my ideas weren't kind of
normal in the environment that I in very rural Ireland back in the 1980s, and then like that, alcohol was like a balm. So as soon as I ingested it, this level of calm came over me. Again, like the critical thoughts stopped, and it just felt like, yeah, exactly the same. And I think a lot of people will feel like that as well. Just in terms of, your, do you want to even just give an overview just around ADHD? Because I know you started talking about that, but maybe for listeners who don't kind of know and who might want to maybe recognize these traits within themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's, everybody is very unique, and this is not to diagnose. Don't go diagnosing yourself from what I'm about to share. But the way that I felt throughout my life, I knew I was smart, but I had a lot of trouble following through on tasks or like doing my work in school. I was the kind of person that if I didn't have a deadline like right in front of my face, the work would not get done. I remember when I was in college, I would have a paper to write, and I had known about it for months, right? But I couldn't get myself to do the work until 48 hours before the deadline it was due, and then I would pull an all-nighter, and I would get it done, and I would turn it in, and I would even get a decent enough grade. But like the executive dysfunction was huge for me. The emotional dysregulation, right? Like your highs can be really high, your lows can be really low. And if you don't have the skills to learn how to sort of sit with your feelings and regulate your emotions, like I would have like tantrums, like lash out at people because I would go from 0 to 60 so quickly. And, emotional dysregulation is a big, huge symptom of ADHD. Emotional dysregulation, executive dysfunction, having trouble focusing. And it's not that people with ADHD aren't able to pay attention to things, but it's that we pay too much attention to everything. So that's why it's hard to focus and prioritize, like, what is the most important thing that I need to focus on right now? Because we can get pulled in a million different directions. It's called like an interest-based nervous system, right? So we can get really excited and focus on the things that we're interested in, the things that we're passionate about, if there's an urgent deadline, if it's something new and exciting, right? But or if it's challenging or if it's competitive, right? But otherwise, we can't, I shouldn't say can't, but we struggle to get things done unless there is like an urgency to it. So that's another piece. And like I said, just kind of feeling like a misfit, having social issues, like not feeling like I didn't fit in. Like I was always trying to gauge what other people were doing to sort of figure out how I was supposed to behave. And that led to a lot of masking. I mean, like you said when we first got on the call, that I seemed so calm. And it made me laugh because I don't necessarily feel calm on the inside, but I'm so good at masking that that's how I can appear to others. So, and alcohol helped me with that. Alcohol helped me to mask and just not feel so different, not feel so self-conscious.
And like I said, huge amounts of people will relate to that because, and we talked briefly there about, the impulsivity of alcohol and,
And
you know, I,
impulsivity is huge, huge
yeah,
with
absolutely.
ADHD.
Yeah, and I was a very impulsive drinker, like mad stuff. I won't even go into it, but like I'm sure listeners have heard me talk about that before. But like would down stuff, and I know I've seen a reel on your Instagram about being a fast drinker. I'm the fastest drinker in the whole wide world of everything. Coffee, and I drink kind of lukewarm coffee, so I will go for a coffee and I'm literally gone. It's finished in 30 seconds, So yeah, incredible impulsivity as well. So, when did, I suppose, the seeds of awareness, when were they planted, and how did your giving up of alcohol look?
Yeah, so I guess I'll backtrack to about 2011. That's when I first started to question my drinking. Like I started to notice that it was more of a need than a want. And I was actually going through a divorce at that time. And So when my ex and I split, it was the first time I had been living on my own. And I wanted to make sure that I, was very social and put myself out there, and I wanted to date, and I was, because it was my choice to leave the relationship, and I wanted to like make the best of it, right? So alcohol kind of became my new partner. I could go out alone and, with my buddy alcohol and sit at the bar and become friends with the patrons and the bartender. And that sort of became my social life over the course of the next decade. What might have been a phase after, ending a marriage and wanting to have fun and party, it turned into really a lifestyle over the next decade. And so within that decade, I then was diagnosed with ADHD because I had been in therapy because of the way I was dealing with the divorce, et cetera. And all the things that would come up in therapy, the therapist would say, "This sounds like ADHD. Have you ever been assessed for ADHD?" And I said, "Absolutely not." I was almost offended. I didn't know what it really was, but went through the assessment, off the charts, ADHD. And on one hand, it was like, oh, so this is what's been happening in my brain all these years that made me feel like I was uniquely flawed in some way. And then on the other hand, I was like, now what? What am I supposed to do? So, and I was still drinking pretty heavily. So that continued for a few years until it got to the point where, like, nothing dramatic or remarkable even happened when I actually decided to quit drinking. It was like I was driving home from somewhere and I remembered that I didn't have any booze in my house. And I said to myself, I think I'm going to take the night off from drinking tonight. I'm not going to stop at the liquor store tonight. I'm just going to like go to bed early, have a good night. And like as I'm saying this to myself, like on autopilot, I pull into the parking lot of the liquor store and I walked in and I bought like two bottles of wine, went home, I polished off one of them, passed out on the couch. I wake up the next morning, I'm looking at my phone. I had been drunk texting people, just people I had no business texting. And I'm now like well into my 40s and I'm like, this is not cute. Like, what's wrong? Something's wrong here. The fact that I can be saying these words out loud, that I need to take the night off and I don't have any booze in my house, to like getting the booze at the same time, I was like, something's wrong here in my brain. And that was the last time I ever drank. So it was very spontaneous. It wasn't like this horrible rock bottom, but some flip switched in my brain that said, this isn't right, and I need to figure out what's going on here. And that became my journey of healing and discovering new coping tools and understanding how ADHD shows up for me in my life. And that's really how I got here.
Yeah, and I'm gonna pick out two things that you said there, which are really remarkable. But one of them is like, so you're saying to yourself something. So there's a motivation there, right? But we're led by autopilot. So like maybe our subconscious mind drove you to the liquor store. And I suppose it's a great idea to begin to look at how we live our lives on autopilot, especially around alcohol. And obviously, like yourself, I coach a lot of people, and a huge amount of the work that I do is like, Olivia, I walked into a house, somebody gave me a glass of champagne, or I walked into a bar and I just picked a glass of, or whatever it is, Prosecco, whatever it is. And they just do it on autopilot, even though there's an incredible motivation there. There's maybe a huge amount of accountability, a lot of peer support, but their autopilot overrides. So they go into that default mode. And I suppose just maybe any tips around how people begin to recognize that?
I mean, that is huge. That's why mindfulness has been the best tool. And it's not about like being perfectly still and having a guru or a mantra or, meditation. It's more just being aware of what you're doing while you're doing it and practicing that on a regular basis, so that there's always a trigger and then there's the response, but there's always space in between the trigger and the response. And when you train your brain to learn how to pause, then you can respond more mindfully than just reacting impulsively, which is, yeah, that is part of the trap of drinking, right? If our brain just wants to, it just wants us to survive, right? It doesn't care if we're happy. It doesn't care if we're right. It just wants to make sure that everything is working properly in the most efficient way possible. And if alcohol is always the go-to when we're at a social function or when we come home from work in the evening or when, when we're doing anything, then our brain just says, oh, yes, alcohol, pick it up, drink it, right? It doesn't like reason. It just does it. And so training your brain to interrupt that pattern of just automatically reaching for alcohol, if that's your go-to, right? You have to give your brain evidence that, like, oh, wait, I can be at a social function and not do this. But it takes practice.
Yeah. And I listened to a podcast this morning with Laura Lynn Jackson, right on my way into work. And I listened to it about 50 times. And she said basically the point of being alive, right, is to love and be loved, right? So I went into work telling everybody that I've learned the secret of life and that we can all go home now because this is the meaning of life, right? But I feel like you have given me the second meaning of life point today that you just said there, being aware of what you're doing when you're doing it. It's just about drawing awareness into our habits, our patterns, I suppose the beliefs that we're bringing to something. You know, just because it was you successfully drank in 1999 when you were like 19 doesn't mean that you should carry it on into your 40s or 50s. And that kind of brings me on to my second point, which you had kind of said, you woke up and you were like drunk texting people, right? And you had the people you had no business texting. Now, I'm pretty sure that you haven't texted anyone inappropriately since you gave up alcohol.
Not once. Not
So there
once.
you go. And you know the way we blame and shame ourselves for behaving in a certain way with alcohol, right? I haven't made a show myself. I haven't drank in 7.5 years, right? So I have not one show has been made of myself since then. Like I don't really suffer from embarrassment, but like I was shaming myself continually, but it wasn't me. And I think that's another point which is really valid here, is that it's not us that do these things. It's the alcohol when we ingest, shut down our prefrontal cortex and make us behave in ways that we don't necessarily when we don't drink.
We have inhibitions for a reason,
Yeah.
right? And so alcohol just makes those go away. And it's very true. Like the beauty of being alcohol free is that I trust myself. It's not that I make all the right decisions all the time. I still make mistakes as a human being, but I trust that I'm making them in good faith. I'm not just drunk texting some old flame that I, to give him a comeback from a fight we had 6 years ago, like that's not important to me anymore. But like when that inhibition goes away, I might have had that thought in the shower in passing and then it went away and I don't act on it. But when, our impulses are completely dulled by alcohol, we'll actually send the text. So, no, I haven't done anything like that in more than 5 years. So,
That in and of itself should be motivation for people as well. And I loved what you said there about training your brain, and that's what it is, you know. So the more we repeat the patterns and these new ways, our brain has that beautiful way of you know, becoming a different, you know, a different being, really.
I mean, neuroplasticity, our brains can form new neural pathways until the day we die. I mean, it's very, but it does take repetition and practice and also positive emotion.
Yes.
Like you can't shame yourself into change. You have to, I always say to my clients, like, we're not restricting ourselves from alcohol to punish ourselves. It's out of love, like
Yeah.
self-care and love, because we want to be healthy. We don't want to be drunk texting people. We don't want to behave in ways that aren't our best self, right? And
Yeah.
So that if you sort of reframe the belief that alcohol is any type of reward or that you're making some sort of sacrifice by giving it up, then it's really easy.
Absolutely. So you get that was the last time that you drank. And what are the things that you've discovered over the last 5 years being a person who doesn't drink?
I don't like going out. And I never did. And I never did. And that's why I drank so much. You know, like I like socializing. I have friends that I like to spend time with, but I don't enjoy going out to loud, crowded places, to bars. Like I just don't. You know, I'll do it on occasion if I must, but I just don't like it. And I'm not embarrassed to say that anymore. You know, like I used to think I was such a party girl. That wasn't it. I was just drinking to tolerate the party, right? So I'm definitely more of a homebody than I ever thought I was. And I'm, you know, part of that is getting older, I know, but it's just like I'm happy going to bed early and drinking my tea and just like calling it a night and waking up knowing that I, you know, nothing terrible happened. I remember everything and, you know, I feel great in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we were speaking a bit earlier, and you know, a couple of people came on the call last night, and they were talking, you know, about maybe they feel their life is a little bit flat at the minute, and they mightn't, they're missing out on fun, you know. And that to me kind of gives me an indication maybe about them, and I suppose maybe how they seek pleasure and dopamine and all that kind of stuff. Is there any, did you experience that, or do many of your clients experience that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely did experience that. And not only that, but the awkwardness of not drinking and being in social situations and feeling like everybody cares that I'm not drinking and that I must have a problem and like what's wrong with me. And, you know, that just takes practice. It's like being new at anything. It's awkward at first, right? But it's like the more you do it, the more confident you become. And I'm actually proud to be a non-drinker. You know, I don't feel awkward about that anymore. I feel proud of that fact. So,
Yeah, it is. And did you feel like, did it take a little bit of time for you to kind of settle into that part of yourself?
yes, it did. It, you know, your identity changes because, like I said, alcohol really, my life pretty much revolved around it. So, you have to, one of the beautiful things, and yes, there may be moments where you feel bored and you're not sure like how to have fun anymore. But I sort of use that as time to get creative and discover what I used to love that maybe I forgot because my hobby was drinking. It didn't matter what we were actually doing, that the activity was always about the drinking. And so I had to like remember what do I enjoy that doesn't revolve around alcohol, right? Like I used to play the piano, which I hadn't played in years, and I started playing the piano again, right? Like I started hiking. I moved out of the city and I moved into the country because I love being in nature, which I sort of forgot, you know, and I love taking hikes and biking and doing, I live on the water and I have a kayak, you know, things like that. So, yes, there's definitely a transition period where you might feel bored or restless and looking for dopamine, you know, but going outside and taking a walk, you know, putting cold water on your face, like just that moment of changing your state, it again interrupts that pattern of thinking like, oh, it's got to be alcohol that's got to give me that buzz. Like there's other things that I can do. So it takes time to figure out what that is for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I love things like skipping and, you know, like in my back garden, and kind of my little girl got a karaoke set from Santa last year, and we've started singing a lot in the evening, you know, and it's unbelievable fun, like for the family, you know, belting out songs that I loved in my own childhood, you know. And I suppose that kind of carefree, you know, and I suppose a lot of, because we live in societies, and I'm sure you are the same, that are so alcohol centric, and everybody is conditioned to kind of shame the person who doesn't drink. Right. So even though if they don't believe, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day and she was saying, like, I was like, what do you think about people who don't drink? And she was like, well, I don't care. And but we then expect everybody to care that we're not drinking. But even when they don't care about, you know, sober people, like they don't have a preconceived opinion of them, they still kind of chastise people who don't drink. It's like it's a greater societal message to annoy the person who's not drinking. Do you get that as well?
Oh, definitely. And I
Yeah.
know when I was a drinker, I didn't trust people who didn't drink. I literally didn't, I didn't trust you if you didn't drink. I thought there was something suspicious about you. And especially if I was dating and I would meet up with somebody for a drink and they didn't drink, I would be personally offended. I think that a lot of that came from the fact that I knew that my drinking was probably not healthy.
Yeah.
And so it's just a mirror. I think that, people make fun of the non-drinker because it makes them question their own
Yeah.
drinking.
Yeah. And it can definitely be, you know, it can people can have a wobble, you know, when there's so much expectation on them to drink, you know, it's kind of annoying as well. Oh, go on, have one, have one, have one, have one. Even from strangers, you know, I've definitely experienced that as well.
I
Yeah.
mean, you can answer back to someone and say I'm allergic or say I'm an
Yeah.
alcoholic. I mean, I don't
Yeah.
even identify as an alcoholic, but if somebody's pressuring you that way, come back at them with something outrageous almost,
Yeah.
I'm dying. I'm good. I have 3 days to live and you want me to, you know what I mean? I don't something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because why should you pressure me to put a toxic carcinogen into my body? Why is that acceptable? What if you had a heroin needle? Inject this now. No one would ever do that.
No, and but it's so acceptable with alcohol.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's crazy. It's not, that's the thing. That's why it's the only drug where you have to justify why you don't choose to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely think things are changing now, though. I think it's a lot more kind of acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the culture is changing, but alcohol is everywhere. I think that if for people like you and me who are sort of in the throes of it and we're alcohol free and we talk about it and we're surrounded by people who are either trying to become alcohol free or are already alcohol free, we might be biased to think that it's more prevalent than maybe it is.
Yeah.
Because before I quit drinking, I didn't know anybody who didn't drink. I didn't want to hang out with them.
Yeah. And have incidentally, have any of your friends or the people you're close to given up drinking because of you?
Yeah, actually, I do know of a few people that either cut down their drinking or quit altogether because I influenced them to do so. I also have friends that I never spoke to again because the whole foundation of our relationship was drinking together.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was, and then there are some people who maybe drink less around me, but I don't know what they do when I'm not around,
Yeah, yeah. They do whatever they want. So what kind of so now you help people you know become alcohol free. So how did that come about?
So, like I said, I kind of quit cold turkey spontaneously, no support. No, I didn't do 12 step, nothing like that. I just sort of made this decision and did whatever I could to learn about, what alcohol was actually doing to me and how it was affecting my ADHD and how do I manage my ADHD now that I'm not drinking, because I was really self-medicating for many years. And then I joined during COVID. There was a peer support groups. It wasn't 12-step related, so I joined that and I got talking to other people and there were coaches in those groups and I said, wow, I would love to be able to facilitate groups like this, because there wasn't really anybody out there talking about this stuff when I was initially first struggling with my drinking, right? And I really wanted to start creating content, I started creating content on TikTok of all places, and it really took off. And then, especially when I started talking about the link between ADHD and alcohol abuse, and suddenly there were like millions of people that were like, oh my gosh, this sounds just like me. And so that's sort of been the focus of my coaching, like neurodivergent people who are struggling with their drinking, who've been self-medicating and just want to learn healthier coping skills.
Yeah.
So I do that with one-on-one coaching. I also have like an online self-guided course, which just offers all of the tools that I use with my clients, but you just don't get me one-on-one. You just have the tools in a little toolbox. And it's just learning how to first like uncover the real reasons behind your drinking. Right? Like, because so often we think, oh, it helps us to relax, helps us to sleep, it's beneficial in all these ways. But when you start to really dig down and see that actually, no, alcohol doesn't help me sleep. It helps me pass out. And then I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, like parched and feeling anxious. And then the next day is ruined because I'm hungover and I didn't get good sleep. And so no, it's not helping my sleep. And when you start to like reframe all these beliefs that you have about alcohol, then it's learning how to practice mindfulness, right? It's learning how to pay attention to what you're doing while you're doing it so that you're not impulsively reaching for a drink. And then learning how to like be in the real world as a non-drinker. Like, how do I turn down drinks when people are putting pressure on me? Things like that. So that's the work that I do with my clients.
Yeah, and there's so many layers to it, isn't there? So, like all of what you said, it's such a journey of self-discovery and healing. And once you kind of remove one layer around, okay, so I'm drinking for this reason, you remove that layer and then you go, oh, but I'm very susceptible to peer pressure. And then you remove that part and then you're like, oh, but I actually feel bored when I'm not drinking. And then, so there's this, there's like many different kind of angles that you can come at it from, you know. And I
Absolutely.
suppose, and like that, you know, a lot of people, and I'm sure you experience this the same. So like they begin to, let's say they have a slip. And then there's this kind of self-loathing and I can't even achieve that. So you know somebody who's trying to remove alcohol and they might have a slip. Is there any way that you could help them reframe it or what works for you or what works for your clients?
Yeah, use it as data. It is not a slip. It is just, it's data. And make sure to learn from that data. Like, pay attention to what triggered you to drink. Why did you decide to drink? How did it make you feel? Did it help? Right? Like, just like pay attention to what happened and just use it as data. And it doesn't take away any of the time that you've already had, right? And then you can make a better, you're more well informed about how drinking affects you and whether or not you actually want to do it or not. Maybe you had a slip and it was great. And you're like, you know what? I can do this again. I'm not encouraging anybody to do that. But the point being, it's just, it's like if you're on a diet and one day you eat a cookie, it doesn't mean that you haven't progressed for all the months that you've been on a diet. You just said, oh, that cookie, I either loved it or no, I really didn't enjoy it. I just wanted it in the moment. It didn't really give me the pleasure that I thought it would or whatever. And you don't eat the cookie again, or you do, but it's just data.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, you know, when you look back at maybe somebody who had drank, you know, 60, 70, 80, 100 times the previous year, and then they've drank 3 times this year or 5 times.
Yeah.
Like when we reframe it like that, that's incredible progress, you know?
Right,
Yeah. And
exactly. There's an
yeah.
app. It's Try Dry.
Okay.
I think it's a UK-based app, actually. It's
Oh, yeah. Dryy. It's Andy Ramage and Matt Pink's app. Is it?
I don't even know, but
Yeah.
I used it when I first I use an app called Try Dry when I first quit drinking, and they ask you how many units you're drinking. So it then they estimate how many calories you're saving, how much money you're saving, and it tracks the days that you have or have not drank during the month. Not like starting from one and I must be dry for the rest of my life. It's just like learning how to control it or manage it or cut down and eventually quit. But I thought it was a really helpful app. And then when you start to see the amount of calories that you're saving, like hundreds of thousands of calories over the course of 5 years, tens of thousands of dollars that I've
Yeah,
saved, you
me
know? So
too.
when you start to look at it that way, you're just like, wow.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're like me, but I spend all of my money on healers now. So money saved through not drinking is spent on healers. You mentioned earlier that like you went on this kind of journey of healing, and you know, what has that looked like for you?
So first it was just reading different books, listening to podcasts, probably like yours, you know, just understanding that I'm not the only person that is going through this, right? In fact, one of the best support groups that I was kind of lurking on in the beginning was on Reddit. There's a stop drinking subreddit,
Okay.
on Reddit, and it was for the first time there were like so many people that I felt like I could relate to that weren't necessarily talking about 12-step and AA. They were just talking about their struggles with drinking. And it just, I related so much to so many of the people. I never posted anything. I was just a lurker, but there were a lot of books that were recommended and podcasts. And that's sort of what opened my eyes to this whole, living alcohol free. And that it's actually a movement, and lots of people are doing this. Like you said, the culture is changing, and there's so many more people like us that are out there talking about this stuff. So yeah, just starting to do a lot of self-help stuff, then joining this group, peer support, coaching group, which was super helpful. And then becoming certified as a coach myself. With the alcohol slant to it, there were other people then who were like me who were sort of becoming like paying it forward. Like, and it was just opening up this whole new world to me of people who are alcohol free and being loud and proud about it.
And I think I for sure live a much more purposeful life now. So it's more intentional. It's more pure. I live a truth more. You know, I suppose the benefits have been so incredible that I couldn't go back to drinking. It would never.
Yeah. I
No.
always say I drink as much as I want to, which is
No.
none.
I love that. Yeah, I drink as much as I want to, which is absolutely none.
Yeah.
We're coming up to Christmas now and the holidays, and you know, a lot of people find a huge increase in pressure to drink even more. So, any tips or what has worked for you over the past 5 years?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is like you don't have to go to the holiday party if you don't want to. I know it's hard and there's guilt and with family and all of that, but if you feel like you will be triggered at a holiday gathering, you don't have to go.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. But if you do go, have a buddy that you can text if you're feeling triggered, or a friend that at the function that you can say, I'm really trying not to drink. If you see me with a glass in my hand, nudge me, let me know. There's a mindfulness exercise that I find really helpful. And it's easy to remember. The acronym is SOBER. And if you're feeling overwhelmed, overstimulated, if you have a case of the fuck it's and you say, I'm just gonna drink, but you really don't want to. So stop, observe. Breathe, expand your awareness, and then respond. And if you still decide that you want to have that drink, then you can allow yourself to have the drink. But it's again creating that pause. It's creating space between the thought, the trigger, the desire to drink, and the actual doing of the drink. So giving yourself literally 60 seconds to what do I really want? Is it alcohol that I really want, or do I just need to get outside and take a breath of fresh air? What is it? And then if you say it's the champagne, then have the champagne. You know? I mean, it's like you don't want to restrict yourself because, again, that shame almost makes you want to drink more. So it's normal to have cravings. It's normal to have triggers. It's normal to feel awkward if someone's pressuring you. But just remember, like, you can say no. The word no is a complete sentence.
Yeah. And you know, I've said it a lot here, but like my journey to alcohol-free living was just saying no about 1,000 times. And it is that first drink that you say no to, that is your boundary set. That is, you know, it, like you said, it's a full sentence. No, I'm okay. You
Yeah.
know, so
Have a
there's a
drink in your hand too. You know, bring your own non-alcoholic beverage or,
yeah.
have a club soda in your hand so that nobody's going to be like, here, you're empty-handed.
Or
You know,
just a
whatever.
glass. An
Right.
empty glass. I've often gone around with an empty glass because sometimes you get really full of drinking, so you just stop. Well, you know, when I suppose it doesn't have the dopamine spikes when you're not drinking, so you don't need to continually be drinking. You know, you get automatically full or whatever. I'll end with this, but thank you for them. They were really, really good. I saw on your Instagram that you talked about, you know, people with ADHD and small talk and like surface level conversations and how much we kind of hate a small talk. Can you kind of talk a bit around that? I found that fascinating.
Yeah, it's I mean, I don't think it's just me, but I think that people with ADHD, we like to go deep and we like to do it right away. And I don't care about the weather. I don't care really about sports. I don't care about your job even. I don't care. I care about like the meaning of life. And not because I'm so deep and I'm so much better than you. It's just like that's what I'm interested in. Like, I want to
Yeah.
really know you. I don't want to know your title. I don't want to know, just boring stuff. And I think that, but part of like being social and normal in society is like, the greetings, like, how you doing? What do you do for work? Da 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 da. And I think that it's a lot. It's really hard for people who are neurodivergent to just waste time and energy talking about the stuff that doesn't matter. And it's not that, you can't get to the deeper stuff like in a more gradual way, but for me, I just, yeah, it's painful. Small talk is painful. And I've noticed that a lot of times neurotypical people who don't have ADHD, they often don't say exactly what they mean. They expect you to infer what they say, by beating around the bush. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to articulate. But yeah, we want to get to the heart of the matter. We don't want to talk small talk.
Yeah, I sat beside somebody yesterday and she told me like her 10-year plan, but with figures. Like she told me like how much like, you know, her pension was worth and like what she's going to do with it. I was so excited. I nearly fainted. I love
Right.
talking about money, right? And it's
Yeah.
crass. A lot of my friends think it's really crass, but I'm like, tell me how much you paid for your house. How much is your mortgage? You know, all of these things. And like, I know it seems maybe that that's TMI, but like, I just get really excited by that. And I offer that to people, but I love getting those little tidbits of life. Like even, you know, when you like listen to, I don't, Gary, my husband, listens to like a lot of sport, soccer players, right? And they give him little tidbits of information from back in the day and he nearly faints with joy, kind of
Yeah.
finding out just these new nuggets of information as well. But then, you know, I'm the same, you know, I love, like, tell me your deepest, darkest secrets, you know,
Right.
and that may be what, that's why we love the booze, because when we remove, when people drink, they become disinhibited and they tell you all your secrets, and we love that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I
Yeah.
actually didn't think of that, but yeah, I definitely like to I like to learn about people and I like to share. And that's why I have found it much easier to have conversations with other ADHDers. And because, and we'll interrupt each other a lot because it's not because we're not listening, it's because we're so excited about what the other's talking about that we want to like chime in and like share our part of a similar story, right?
Yeah.
So, and one of the things like, becoming sober and learning about that about myself, that I don't really like going out and just making small talk and socializing, is like learning about the things that I do enjoy talking about and f finding finally the people that I do enjoy speaking to. And that has been a journey as well. Like, I have a whole new community of like neurodivergent people that I know now that like don't find me annoying.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe I don't know if you agree with this, but like, is there really like I think everybody has a little bit of something. I think the world of maybe being neurotypical isn't as elusive or exclusive as we think it is. I think everyone has a little bit of something.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think a lot of it is societal, whether or not it's like diagnosable. I think
Yeah.
that, we're all easily distracted these days. We're all like, our attention span has gotten much
Yeah.
worse due to scrolling. I mean, I catch myself mindlessly scrolling a lot. That's my new addiction these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, everybody experiences those type of symptoms, those traits in their lifetime. I think, having ADHD, being diagnosed, whether you're self-diagnosed or formally diagnosed, it's when it interferes with your life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that you, yeah. Absolutely. Thank you. This has been incredible.
Yeah,
Your
thank you.
perspective is so enlightening, and I know it's I've really enjoyed it, but I know everybody else really will as well. So, do you want to give people information about where they can find you or follow you or stuff like that? Thank you.
Yes, Rebel Without a Drink on Instagram and TikTok. That's the best place to find me. And I have loads of ADHD-friendly tools and resources if you're trying to change your relationship with alcohol. So you can find me there.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time. I've loved our conversation, and
Likewise,
hopefully
thank you.
our paths will cross again.
Yes, hopefully.
No More Booze, the podcast, is produced, mixed, and mastered at the studios of Irish Audio Drama. For more information, visit irishaudiodrama.com.